local mill. Work dried up, not a mill is there. I can't pay my bills. Repo man is at my door. They used to call us working class, but we're just not working anymore. Well, I had me wife, kids, a car, and a boat. Things got bad, now the boat won't float. I don't like it. People, they used to call us working class, but we're just not working anymore. We're not a working, we're not a working, we're just not working.
Hello, folks. Welcome to another edition of the World Labor Hour, brought to you in the air, listener-supported community radio station, WFT, broadcasting from downtown Champaign, Illinois. The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of the station manager, board of directors, or of Prairie Air Incorporated. And now here's Bill with some underwriting announcements.
This hour of programming is brought to you in part by Central Illinois Jobs with Justice, a coalition of union and community groups working for economic justice and workers' rights. Central Illinois Jobs with Justice holds regular meetings on the third Saturday of every month at 9:30 a.m. at the Channing Murray Foundation, 1209 West Oregon, Urbana. For more information, visit Illinois JWJ.org. That's Central Illinois JWJ.org. Programming on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by listeners of WEFT and Decatur attorney Bill Faber, who believes that the mission of the law is the safety of the people. Bill Faber proudly supports the World Labor Hour. The World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois. And excuse me, folks. The Graduate Employees Organization Union, GEO, at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, strives to not only democratically represent graduate employees, but also to give solidarity and support to other unions, organizations, and workers engaged in the struggle for social justice, both on and off campus. The GEO is proud to support the World Labor Hour on WEFT Community Radio. Sorry, folks, I'm a little dry. I should have brought something to drink today, but another one? Nope, that's it.
Okay, very good. We're going to be having a special guest call in at half past the hour, Sue Saltmarsh from Springfield, Illinois. She's going to be talking about an upcoming national march in Washington, D.C. in August for basically for single-payer health care. Health care is a human right. campaign. So she'll be calling in and talking a little bit about that. And then here in just a few minutes, we're going to have Jim Eyman's going to be calling in talking about that recent train derailment in near Philadelphia. He's got some insights on that for us. But in the meantime, some news stories here. The United States was slammed over its human rights record Monday at the United Nations Human Rights Council.
Really?
With member nations criticizing the country for the United States, that is, for police violence, racial discrimination, the Guantanamo Bay detention facility, and the continued use of the death penalty. The issue of racism and police brutality dominated the discussion on Monday during the country's second Universal Periodic Review. Country after country recommended that the U.S. strengthen legislation, expand training to eliminate racism and excessive use of force by law enforcement. I'm not surprised that the world's eyes are focused on police issues in the U.S., said Alba Morales, who investigates the U.S. criminal justice system at Human Rights Watch. There is an international spotlight that's
been... I bet he's busy.
Yes. There's an international spotlight that's been shown on the issues, in large part due to recent events in Ferguson and the disproportionate police response to even peaceful protesters, he said. Anticipating the comments to come, James Cadogan, a senior counselor to the U.S. Assistant Attorney General, told delegates gathered in Geneva, quote, "The tragic deaths of Freddie Gray in Baltimore, Michael Brown in Missouri, Eric Gardner in New York, Tamir Rice in Ohio, and Walter Scott in South Carolina have renewed a long-standing and critical national debate about the even-handed administration of justice. These events challenge us to do better and to work harder for progress, though both through both dialogue and action." But advocates like Morales say the U.S. could do much more. The use of excessive force by police was a major part of this year's report, and the fact that we still don't have a reliable national figure to know how many people are killed by the police in the U.S. or what the racial breakdown is of those people is a travesty, he said. A nation as advanced as the United States should be able to gather that number. The Justice Department did not respond to requests for comment. Imagine that, huh? Okay, also, new story here. The number of homeless people in Los Angeles County jumped 12% in the past 2 years to more than 44,000 amid a sluggish economic recovery that has left the poorest residents of the second largest U.S. metropolitan area falling farther behind, a study released on Monday found. Most of those counted weren't staying in homeless shelters. The study also found that the number of tents, makeshift encampments, and vehicles with people living in them jumped by 85% to about 9,500. You were just talking about this last week, I believe it was, or 2 weeks ago, Bill. About people living in their cars and that this is not being reported by the corporate media.
Well, yeah, I mean, there had been a rash of stories, you know, going back more like to 2009.
Yes.
And it seems like over the last few years that stuff has kind of been forgotten.
Yep.
And I'm not really sure what the situation is now, but it always... Like I said last week, it was always strange. It seemed like they'd always find a carpenter, an unemployed carpenter to talk to. It's like if you're a carpenter, you should be able to easily get a job. I don't know. Maybe that's what they think or something.
Yeah. California was one of the hardest hit states in the country during the economic recession, suffering high unemployment and high job losses, the Housing Authority said in a news release. There is a lag in rebound, and the working poor and low-income individuals have been hit particularly hard with a trifecta of unemployment, stagnant wages, and a lack of affordable housing. The economy has improved, but not for the people at greatest risk of homelessness, said Peter Lynn, the authority's executive director. Other big cities have experienced similar increases in homelessness for many of the same reasons. According to the advocacy group Coalition for the Homeless, the number of New Yorkers sleeping in the city's many shelters is up more than 65% from 10 years ago. In January, the system in New York City held more than 60,000 people, including 25,000 children. Studies have found that Southern California, like New York City, has some of the highest rents in the nation, and that throughout California, 1.5 million households lack access to affordable housing. The California Housing Partnership report issued in April said that the state's lowest income households spend 2/3 of their income on housing. That's quite unbelievable.
Yeah, well, I was working back in March with some people from California. And they were just amazed at how low the rents are here.
Yeah, relatively speaking. Okay, also what's interesting is that there was a train derailment here last week. And, you know, here this... it's interesting because if I remember correctly, right after this train derailment, many of the House Republicans wanted to cut the transportation budget by an additional, I think it was 20%, you know, and which is crazy because this is probably part of the reason for the train derailment to begin with. There's a lack of safety equipment and general infrastructure improvements that have just been allowed to deteriorate in this country in general, not just with train tracks, but bridges, roads, and other vital infrastructure.
Oh, yeah,
dams,
man.
Levees.
It's scary when I'm driving down the interstate and I look up and I see a place where a chunk of concrete is spalled off the side, bottom side of a bridge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's right over a lane where somebody could have been driving, and even if they weren't, didn't hit some. Oh, Jim Iman.
Yep.
It's a danger just being in the roadway for a while.
Indeed. Hello, WFT. You're on the air.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Jim.
On the question of the Philadelphia train wreck,
yes,
this catastrophe should never have happened. These PTC devices, which are protective train controls, were all in place. Supposedly now they were turned off. How do you turn them off? They were always on. At least the crew thought they were on, or this never would have happened. If the operator at the Philadelphia terminal knew that they were off, and probably did, that should have been in place.
Mm-hmm.
Then they would have issued a special slow order.
Okay.
Oh, by the way, folks, this is Jim Iman, our senior transportation correspondent.
Yes, retired railroad worker. Sure. Yes. Retired railroad worker, yes.
That's right. Local 1382, United Transportation Union, Local 1382,
mm-hmm.
Milwaukee Road, Sioux Line retired. Now, what we have here is a failure of a part of the union, the United Transportation Union, which I was around at the beginning of, which was a scabby-ass union to begin with, never once put up any objections to the fact that you have a two-man crew here.
Okay.
There was only one man in the engine compartment. There was no slow order issued. Obviously, everybody, the conductor and the engineer, thought that everything was operative.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, now the other problem here is the crew size. You only have a two-man crew. You don't get on a plane without having a co-pilot, do you? No. But well, one engineer without a what we used to call a fireman or a co-engineer is unthinkable. Even that would have stopped it.
Mm-hmm. I understand they want to go to one-man crews.
Yeah.
Oh, well, they like to get rid of all of the crews, you know, mm-hmm. do it all over here. Now, it's understandable to have one man. I talked to Greg Jackson, my colleague here, who's up on railroad events more than I am to some extent. And he told me, like, in Japan, these bullet trains have only one guy, but they have this fantastic infrastructure,
mm-hmm,
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, the conductor is just watching the controls. And it's all, you know. But, I mean, we're defunding the
yes.
railroads. It all started with Eisenhower
mm-hmm.
And the interstate road system.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been a war on the railroads since the Second World War.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. My dad had semis.
Yeah.
He hated the railroads.
Yeah, competition.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I understand even here in Central Illinois, there used to be what was called the interurban trains that you could get from.
Oh, yeah. Danville I live to... on an interurban track bed between B-Mint and Monticello.
Mm-hmm.
I am kind of and oh, by the way, I was reading a history of B-Mint last night.
Mm-hmm.
And for the folks who are kind of remote, B-Mint is a very small town. It's around 1,700 people. And in, I believe it was 1902, there were 66 passenger trains a day.
Really?
Going through B-Mint. That was before the interurban line, I believe.
Okay. Now, Jim.
Right now,
mm-hmm.
yeah. back on Bill's point about high-speed transportation.
Mm-hmm.
In the 1930s, there was one slow order between Chicago and Milwaukee. Slow to 100 miles an hour at the Elgin, or the EJ&E, Elgin, Joliet, and Eastern Railroad.
Mm-hmm.
Slow to 100 miles an hour. they were going 140, 150 miles an hour in the 1930s, steam-powered engines.
Wow, wow.
With no, you know, no train wrecks.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. But you see, we can't do, we're not putting anything into any infrastructure in this country.
Yeah, and also, yes, and that...
You're right about the bridges.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, I see these railroad bridges that look like they're some, they were built by the Romans, you know?
Yeah.
They're so old.
I mean, look at China. China just started actually building high-speed rail lines about, when was it, 10 years ago? They just started. And, I mean, they've got trains that, you know, Japan does too, that go close to 300 miles an hour. And China has built high-speed rail not only into the western part of China, but all the way to Istanbul, Turkey, and also connecting routes into Vietnam, India. They're calling it the new Silk Road, and I heard that they're wanting to are still negotiating, but they want to do a line from basically Shanghai to Moscow, a final ending in Berlin, Germany. You know, I mean, this
is... Yeah, they've also built railroads in Africa, too.
Okay, I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, well, here's the thing, and I it's bizarre because I was pretty young, but I remember when Amtrak started.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is, to Republicans, Amtrak has the potential of being the socialized enterprise that succeeds.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, know, much like the VA, and they're always trying to sabotage the VA.
Now, Jim, haven't they... basically, over quite a few years, maybe even decades, have continuously underfunded Amtrak.
That's why.
Yeah, they were actually making money.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You can't have that.
Yeah, and I understand to that line between Washington D.C. and Boston, which is the line that where this crash happened, it has incredible ridership demand. I mean, it's basically it's incredibly popular. And of course, I hear a lot of politicians try to say, "Well, no one wants to take the train anymore." You know.
Well, here's another thing too, Dave. It's like I didn't even think about it. The city of New Orleans runs through this town.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just Carl Estabrook, somebody who used to be a host on this station and mm-hmm. also does a show on the local cable.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he was talking one day about when he moved here from Boston, he thought it was really great because he could just get on a train and go to New Orleans whenever he wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, where's the billboards about that?
Oh, that's a good point.
You know, nobody, it's like this resource we have that people don't even think about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I know, you know, my wife's from Germany originally, and I know, you know, visiting there many times is that every small town has, if they don't have a train connection, they've got like a interconnecting bus connection between the closest town with a rail connection. And I mean, here, if you live, let's say, out in Bemet or Philo or somewhere like that, these small towns, I mean, if you don't have a car, what do you do if you want to, you need to get into Champaign?
Yeah, well, Dave, there is, I don't, and... something that's been growing out where I live in Piatt County,
mm-hmm.
and it's called Piatran.
Mm-hmm.
And it's mainly for the disabled mm-hmm. and elderly.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, this is strange. I know one disabled person that a few years ago, Piatran went all the way over to Rantoul to bring her to Champaign for an appointment.
Well, you know, that's something that recently new development because for the longest time that there wasn't anything, and that's probably
yeah. Well, this Piatran started at least about 10 years, maybe more ago, and it's just slowly grown.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping that it might be the foundation of something.
Well, Jim, let me ask you this: what do you think should be done about rail transport in the United States?
Yes, senior transportation correspondent Jim Iman.
Thank you, Bill, for that. Well, first of all, we have to stop thinking automobiles and start thinking mass transit.
Mm-hmm.
It is absolutely crux. Now, the Milwaukee Road at one point was probably the greatest railroad in the United States. We had a an all-electric system going from Montana all the way to Seattle.
Really? Wow.
And this was all powered by the Grand Coulee Dam.
Clean energy.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely clean energy. See? Well, and they came from all over the world to study mm-hmm. our system.
Wow.
And it's obvious how important the ability to switch over to electricity is going to be in the future. In fact, I probably need to upgrade my heating and air conditioning, and I'm thinking about going with an electric furnace this time.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Well, anyway, yes, Jim. You know, it's just like a lot of things. It seems like, you know, here the United States is one of the richest countries in the world, but it seems like for the past several decades we're dropping down to third world standards.
That's because of the debt this country has.
Yes, and also the priorities, right. The policy
we're
priorities.
We're borrowing money to conduct wars.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Rather than investing in infrastructure and keeping our nose out of the foreign affairs of other countries.
Okay.
Okay, I will agree with that, but we still have the money. It doesn't really matter. The debt doesn't matter. It's almost like a fiction. In fact, every time that we get any money out of the Federal Reserve, there is debt. It is debt. Debt is what creates the money. And there's plenty of money around, but it's all in the top 0.1%'s pockets.
Yeah.
And they won't spend it. If they would at least invest it in productive enterprises around the country, that would help. Mm-hmm. But they won't do it. You know, we need the government to be the investor of last resort.
Well, you know, the leaders of the free world in Wall Street are going to do whatever they want to do, and the government will do what they want, what the banks want them to do.
Because they finance their campaigns.
That is,
yes. Okay, Jim. Well, hey, listen. Any last words today about the infrastructure, train travel?
Mm-hmm. One last thing.
Uh huh.
This accident demands, at least on the Eastern Seaboard, an Amtrak strike to restore at least a 3-man crew, if not a 4-man crew, which they should have.
Mm-hmm.
This never would have happened if there had been what we used to call a fireman or a co-engineer on there.
Okay.
Even without the protective train control. So that's what's got to happen. I hope they do strike. I'm all for it. Something's got to be done. The amount of money it takes to hire one more man. Look at the millions. It might even be $1 billion.
Mm-hmm.
In lost revenue and in suits that are going to be put on Amtrak with this wreck.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, they're not even good capitalists.
Yeah. Good point there, Jim. Okay, Jim, thank you so much for calling in with that insight.
Surely.
Okay, take care. All right, folks, that was Jim Iman, and we're going to go to a quick music break here, and we're waiting for Sue Saltmarsh from Springfield, Illinois, to call in to talk about a national march on Washington in August for single-payer health care, so stay tuned.
We sing at a memorial there in the little town of Mount Olive. Now, who of note in American history is buried in the cemetery in Mount Olive, Illinois? I'll give you a hint. It was a woman. It was the Union Miners Cemetery. Do you have it yet? Mary Harris Jones, Mother Jones. It's hard for the mind to encompass a life that embraced the presidencies between Andrew Jackson and Herbert Hoover. Why, when Mother Jones was a little girl, there were people still alive who remembered the Revolutionary War. And she died on the eve of the New Deal. Her millinery shop burned down in the Chicago fire, and she had heard Abraham Lincoln speak in person. Mostly, though, Mother Jones was the miner's friend. Down in Kentucky, Tennessee, West Virginia, well, the men had been organizing the underground workers, the miners. Mother Jones had already organized their wives and led them over the snow-covered game trails down into the Hollis, where, armed with mops and brooms, they drove the scabs out of the coal pits. Now, Mother Jones wasn't an organizer, she was an agitator, which meant often enough she was hated as much by the organizers as by the bosses. One time, Mother Jones was out in Colorado at the great Ludlow strike. Now, that was a strike to enforce the 8-hour day, which the state of Colorado had made a law, but they couldn't enforce it because Rockefeller owned the militia. Now, the governor promised not to send the militia into the coal fields, but he lied, and he did. Mother Jones was in the Union Hall down there at Ludlow, and word came that the militia had entered the coal fields. Well, she leapt up, and she screamed, "Let's go get the sons of bitches!" And she stormed out. She didn't look to see if anybody was following her. Nobody was following her. She just flounced up the road alone and confronted the militia. And that was the year that President Theodore Roosevelt called Mother Jones the most dangerous woman in America. And she was 83 years old. That's some kind of dangerous.
Okay, that was Utah Phillips, Danny DeFranco. There's their song, Most Dangerous Woman, off the Fellow Workers CD. And the reason I played that was because the Mother Jones and Miners gravesite down in Mount Olive, Illinois, was just recently refurbished, and there was a rededication ceremony. I think it was like about a week or two ago and everything. So, but anyway, some quick public service announcements. Tune in to the May edition of Speaking of Democracy today at 1 p.m. on WFT 90.1 FM. Host Doug Olive will be serving two books, News, The Politics of Illusion by University of Washington sociologist Lance W. Bennett, and Media Unlimited by Columbia University communications professor Todd Glitland. So make sure you tune into that right after the Union Edge today. Also, tune in to WRFU 104.5 for the radio program Change the Game with Martell Miller and Chris Evans every Tuesday from 11 a.m. to start. Basically starts at 11 a.m. and it's on WRFU 104.5 FM. So anyway, we've got a few minutes here until our guest calls in, Bill. Any thing that interested you this week kind of in the world going on?
Oh, boy, I've been busy this week on the hammer. So
Jackhammer, that is.
Jackhammering. Well, it's really it, but it's something that I've felt for at least a few years now. And it's when I'm on these construction jobs, you know, this is Champaign. It's not like, you know, a lot of gigantic construction projects you can be involved with. Mm-hmm. However, the State Farm Center used to be the Assembly Hall. Renovation is a pretty big job around here, but I am just continually amazed at the amounts of material and energy that go into these things. It really just brings it home to me on how small this planet is and how finite our resources are. I don't know if other people don't seem to notice it so much, but it's just amazing. But I, you know, and I'm starting to get the same feelings, you know, just driving around, you know, like driving to work in the morning, and there's me and there's all these people and all of these cars converging on this town, in the same way. Just the numbers of vehicles and their sophistication and everything, it's incredible. I think it's so much, and I think it does tie into getting back into more mass transportation.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to be able to drive like maybe a small, one of these little bitty small town electric cars or a scooter or something over to Monticello and get on a train to come to Champaign.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, I don't particularly want them to bring back the old interurban and have a train running right in front of my house several times
not.
A day.
Yeah.
I can't see.
But if it was an electric train, it wouldn't make hardly any noise at all.
Yeah. But I was not alive. See, that train ran up until the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
I was not alive yet when it finally was taken out, but I do remember the tracks still existed in the highway Route 105 in the town of Monticello for quite some time.
Yeah, and there's an interesting story about how various interurban trains and even some city mass transit train streetcar systems were basically sabotaged and destroyed by corporate malfeasance.
Well, Los Angeles.
In Los Angeles in particular, basically because of the oil company, sort of an alliance between the oil companies, the car manufacturers, and the tire companies.
Well,
right,
you
after
see,
the Second World War.
Right, and they what happened, I think what happened, GM came in and started buying up or creating bus lines,
mm-hmm.
partly so they could sell buses to them.
Sure.
And also, it took away from the the tram train type systems too. And once their infrastructure was gone, then GM can just kill the buses.
Yeah. And this is the problem in a capitalist society when you have corporate entities making these decisions that people have no say on.
Well, folks, it's like they say, war is too important for generals. Okay. Business is too important for capitalists.
Yep. Hello, WFT, you're on the air.
Hi, it's Sue Saltmarsh, David.
Hi, Sue. How you doing?
I'm good.
Okay. Could you just tell us a little, tell the listeners a little about yourself?
Sure. I'm the director of the Drive for Universal Healthcare.
And that's D-U-H?
Yes.
Oh, that's a good acronym. I like that. Okay.
That's almost as good as Just Healthcare by the old Labor Party.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, so you're the director of DUH. The direct, basically. And what was that acronym stand for again for our listeners?
The Drive for Universal Healthcare.
Okay.
And I'm now also director of the Healthcare Justice March, which is happening on the National Mall on August 1st.
In Washington, D.C.?
Yes, indeed.
Okay. All right. Now, what... can you tell us a little about, first of all, what you think, what was kind of the impetus for planning this march, this upcoming march in August? Just tell us a little bit about the reasons, the need, or whatever, and, sort of who's involved, maybe, or whatever you think's appropriate.
Sure. I have always been sort of an actor, not a talker.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been involved in the single-payer movement only since 2011. I'm sort of a newbie.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I found early on was that there are so many dedicated, passionate, committed people to this cause, but there's really not a lot of action that draws other people in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't get a lot of media attention, and whereas there's always somebody from the right who will comment on anything having to do with the ACA or Obamacare, as they call it, there's never a single-payer voice to rebut those things.
Yes. I mean, people who are supportive of single-payer have their criticisms, lots of them, actually, of the Affordable Care Act over Obamacare, but you never hear those voices in the corporate media. And frankly, I rarely even hear in the alternative media, the progressive media, if you will, like, Tom Hartman, Democracy Now!, or programs like that.
Yes, I agree. And I think one of the reasons is that we don't really have a presence in anybody's mind.
And the reason we don't have any presence in anyone's mind is because few people out there know that organizations like yours and other single-payer healthcare organizations even exist.
Exactly. I was recruited by Ann Sheets and Sonia Rottenberg of the ISPC.
Illinois Single-Payer Coalition,
Yes, and I was so thrilled to know that such a thing existed.
Yeah.
And I then, of course, the door opened to my awareness of all different kinds of single-payer organizations. But unless you're recruited or are specifically searching for those things, you don't know about them.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of talk about how we need to educate the public. Well, first we need to get their attention and let them know that we exist.
Indeed.
That's one of the purposes of this march, but I was also so impressed with the People's Climate March in September of last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had 400,000 people from around the world descend on New York, and there has been significant policy changes in different countries, I believe, in part because so many people showed up. You know, they showed those leaders that it's getting to the point where changes have to be made. And that's exactly what we have to do. You know, we have leaders like John Conyers and Bernie Sanders who are putting forth legislation that dies in committee year after year. And we need to let the others know that we're paying attention.
You know, it's interesting. I've seen poll after poll that shows the always a majority of Americans in support of single-payer health care. Now, of course, it depends on how you ask the question. Right. If you phrase the poll
question...
Do you
want government-run health care?
Yeah, then you're going to have lower numbers. But you say, would you like to see the Medicare program improved and expanded to every man, woman, and child of the United States? Then the percentages of support are in the 80 percentiles.
Meanwhile, there's been a big study out that shows that the United States isn't basically an oligopoly, and that... The decisions, the votes in Congress do not line up at all with the people, but they do line up very well with
corporate interests.
Right.
Yeah.
That's true. And, you know, there was just, I think yesterday or the day before, the study from Families USA that came out that said still, you know, a quarter of the insured population can't access health care. Because the out-of-pocket costs are so high.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And besides that, I have a Union Cadillac health
supposedly
program. And last year, I had to self-pay because I didn't get enough hours in. And it was
$1,300.
Okay,
month?
No, for the quarter.
For a quarter, okay.
Yeah, okay. And but this year, it was $1,700.
That's quite an increase
yes.
in just 1 year.
And but you know, I'm sure it was due to that tax.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Largely, part at least.
Yeah. So tell me a little about the organizing for this healthcare march coming up here in August.
All right. I have to say, I have to give a thanks to my good friend and our associate director, Donna Ellington. She's also the social media director for DUH. She and I have almost double-handedly done the groundwork for this march. We've gotten all of the applications for permits, and because we're marching from a park that is just west of the Martin Luther King Monument to the Capitol, we go through three jurisdictions.
Nah.
Okay.
National Park Service, Capitol Police, and Metro Police. So they all had to get applications, and... It's just been a roller coaster ride, but quite an adventure. And we've also run many different kinds of appeals and campaigns to get endorsements and people signed up to attend and, of course, fundraising. And right now we're on the cusp of starting with a new group of volunteers who are also very talented, committed, single-payer people who bring different skills to the table and are going to help us with the final details. It seems like, it's just a march. You know, people show up with their signs and their banners and walk in the heat, and hopefully nobody faints. But when you're doing something on the National Mall, you have to consider things that you never would have thought of, like porta potties and crowd control fencing and security people. And, you know, there are all different kinds of requirements that each of these entities have. So it's been a very good experience. We met actually in person in Washington in March with the National Park Service. And it was a great meeting, and we have a wonderful production company, National Events, who is handling all of the equipment and stage and stuff, the load-in, load-out, that sort of thing. And we have a very good friend of mine who I used to work with when we were both at Hubbard Street Dance Chicago, and he was the lighting designer and I was the wardrobe supervisor. He has agreed to be our production manager, and I really feel like it started out as my vision, and it has now spread way beyond me.
Good, like a good virus.
Yes, really.
Okay. Now, you said it's starting at the Martin Luther King Memorial, and it's ending in front of the U.S. Capitol?
Well, it's not at the Martin Luther King Memorial because nobody can demonstrate there.
Ah.
But just west.
How ironic.
Yes. Well, we'll look at the statue itself.
Okay.
As one comedian said, do you think Martin Luther King wanted to be portrayed as a giant white man?
Right.
The statue's white.
I didn't know that.
Yes,
interesting.
It is.
Okay. So anyway, you're starting there just west of there, and then you're, where's the march ending at?
Yes, we're going down Independence Avenue and over 3rd Street to what they call Area 15.
Oh, my God. Is that Area 51 backwards?
Okay, so what is Area 15?
Area 15 is a semicircular area in front of the reflecting pool that's in front of the Capitol.
Okay.
We can't, unfortunately, be on the grassy area right in front, which is the optimum place to be because it has built-in electricity.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing a lot of work on the dome of the Capitol, so they've sent that off. And the other area that has electricity, Upper Senate Park, another group has that already.
So, okay.
We will squeeze into the Area 15, and as I said to the Capitol police officer that I've been working with, you know, we expect to lose a few folks along the way. It's a two-mile march, and, you know, it's hot and humid in Washington in August, and we'll be encouraging people to bring umbrellas and their own water and make sure they have sunscreen and all of that. But, you know, it's physically challenging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I guess do you have somebody working on the press releases? And the, I mean, I know it's early to do that, but I think that's going to be, to me, it sounds like, besides all the logistical challenges that you sounds like you've already dealt with some of them, is as far as getting media coverage. I mean, right. Have you any thoughts on that as far as what you've thought about doing in regards to that, I should say?
Well, we have a media strategy, and already phase one has kicked off, Nation of Change, which is a progressive digest of different social cause news. Has agreed to be a sort of sponsor of ours and are posting things about the march almost weekly, and they will continue to be very supportive, as will Popular Resistance, which is...
Oh, yes. Dr. Margaret Flowers and Kevin Zeese's...
Right, and mm-hmm. Those two will be speaking at the pre-march rally. They have generously agreed to help us with that.
Mm-hmm.
And there are also other organizations and speakers that will appear, including the Raging Grannies.
Oh, excellent. Excellent.
We're very glad to get them, and I'm very excited to report that the Reverend Jesse Jackson has been following us on Twitter.
Oh, okay.
Yay.
Okay.
Yeah, talk about social media. In this interview, you have mentioned three Facebook friends of mine, Donna Marie Ellington, and these last two, Kevin and
Margaret Flowers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, that's amazing. Yes, I'll tell you. So I know that coming up here in July is the 50th birthday of Medicare.
Right.
And so was this part of the reason why you chose August of this year to do this?
Yes, indeed. I actually have to give credit to Dr. Bill Honigman from California. He and we were out on the West Coast, and I started to talk about this march. He was like, "Do it for Medicare's 50th." You know, I thought, "Oh, let's do it in October when it's a little cooler," you know. But he was very encouraging and has promised to push my wheelchair. So
okay. Yeah, you know, I know there's going to be a lot of different celebrations around the country coming up here in July.
Right.
All sorts of them for Medicare's birthday. And in fact, what I understand is the logo for kind of the I don't know, it's loosely coordinated these events for celebrating Medicare's 50th anniversary is a symbol of an apple pie or cherry pie or whatever is, and that the icon, basically the acronym is PIE. They say basically Medicare is as American as apple pie, and the word actual PIE pie stands for, in regards to Medicare, protect, improve, and expand. And I thought that was
right.
A very clever idea. And I think all these different events going on all over the place. I've heard about events going to be happening in California, Ohio, Maryland, Pennsylvania, Chicago, and even Washington, D.C. This sounds like your timing of having this big national healthcare march in D.C. Is perfect timing, because you kind of have all these other sort of warm-up events happening the previous month.
Right. Well, and we're hoping that by doing it on August 1st, which is a Saturday, folks who have gotten fired up at their local events on July 30th may be able to bring their kids and come to Washington and really, you know, make a sort of four-day celebration of Medicare out of it, with March being the cherry on top of the sundae.
Yes. You know, this is so critical. I'm hoping, you know, that the challenge, of course, is to get it, you know, the corporate media, you know, if you can get enough people there, even the corporate media is going to have to cover it, you know, and I'm sure that's probably one of your main objectives here.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the alternative media, you know, they really need to. Have they been informed about this upcoming event?
Yes, they have, and they will get regular reminders.
That's good. That's good.
We have a sort of postcard. We call it a postcard that we send out about saving the date and making sure that everybody knows when it's happening and where it's happening and how to donate and those sorts of things.
Okay.
And for the press, you know, I, as somebody who was a journalist of sorts, I wrote for the national magazine that my HIV agency published. I know that advance notice is really important, and also repetitive notice.
Mm-hmm.
So we're definitely, that's within the strategy. And we have a wonderful, wonderful volunteer, Peter Robbins, who's with Single Payer New York. He is gathering information for a database and has done way better than either Donna or I could have done in just three days.
Oh, great, great. Okay, well, we just have a few minutes left. Did you want to let our listeners know where they can go to find more information about this march?
Sure. The website for the march is www.healthcarejusticemarch.org, and I encourage them to check the update page frequently. That's where I almost daily add things as progress continues. And then there's our Facebook page. We have Facebook event pages. All you have to do is type in Healthcare Justice March in the search box, and all that will come up. Our Twitter address is HC capital, both of those capital, Justice March at HC Justice March. Actually, the J and the M in Justice March is also capitalized. And we have gone from no followers to 581 followers in a little over a month's time. So
okay, good.
Very active on Twitter.
Good deal.
There's also, I'll give you the info on donating, because really at this point, money is the only thing that's missing. And in 2012, my first plan died because I couldn't raise the money. So I will encourage everybody. I know it's a terrible thing to ask money, and it's a terrible thing to want to contribute and not have the money to do so. But as we say, we'll take a dollar from couch cushion change if that's all you've got.
Okay.
You can donate by hitting the PayPal button on our website. You can contribute to our CrowdRise campaign, which is www.crowdrise.com/HealthcareJusticeMarch/fundraiser/SueSaltMarsh. You can mail a check to Healthcare Justice March, 517 South Park Avenue in Springfield, 62704.
At Springfield, Illinois?
Yes, indeed.
Okay. Sue, thank you so much.
Oh, by the way,
go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, I just liked the page, and I am now inviting friends to like it.
Thank you. Well, that's another important thing. Use your social network.
To share the post. Indeed.
Well, how else are you going to get it out if you go to the grocery store and you're standing in the checkout line? You're not going to see something like the Progressive or the Nation or anything like that. It's going to be stupid soap opera magazines and so on. Mm-hmm. And have you ever noticed that it seems like they don't really sell?
Yeah.
They just sit there. They just sit there.
Indeed. Sue, thank you so much for calling in today, and we'll probably have to have you call in here. We get real close to August for an update.
Great. Thank you for having me, David.
My pleasure. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah. I just invited Cindy Sheehan to it.
Living is the thing that money can't.
Okay, there's two songs there. The first one was Ann Feeney, We Want National Healthcare Now, and the last one you heard was Patti Smith, People Have the Power. So, indeed, folks, you know, the thing is about the corporate media is that they're trying to, there's a war for your mind, and they're trying to shape and control your reality. And this is one thing why WFT and programs like ours, the World Labor Hour, are so important, because we've got to get the truth out there, because that is really what's going on. We don't, you know, a lot of people try to say that the U.S. media is one of the best media in the world. Well, it's the slickest propaganda machine in the world, but if you consume regular information from the corporate media, you're not only going to be misinformed, you're going to be disinformed and not know much about what's going on in the world. Of course, you'll hear all sorts of things about Britney Spears or Kim Kardashian or blah, blah, blah.
Not really so much Britney Spears anymore.
Well, maybe not. But nevertheless, you get my point here. But the thing is that you need to be, if we're going to be living in a real democracy, a real essential component of that is that the citizens have to be well-informed. And, it's a real battle. But I think this is a very good reason I'm saying all this is because this whole issue of Medicare for all, single payer, national health care, universal health care, what do you want to call it, is a perfect example among many issues in which the American people, vast majority of the American people, want it, but none of the politicians or very few of the politicians will support it. And the corporate media will either ignore it or basically try to belittle it or actually try to discredit it.
But also, too, Dave, I mean, earlier we were talking about with our guest about the big demonstrations, rallies, and so on and so forth. And this, of course, is related to the media thing, which is a distraction and an opiate of the masses, perhaps, at the same time. If you look at other countries like, say, Europe, you'll have a country with only like 50 million people, and a million of those people will come out.
Into the streets, yeah.
Right. And quite often they're led by the trade unions.
Indeed.
We just don't have that in the United States. If we get 100,000 people out to Washington or New York City, that's considered a really big deal. But in a nation of, 350 million, 325 Roughly. Million yes. people, uh-huh. We should be able to get a million people out easily.
Yeah, you'd think. But also, it's a larger country. It's harder to get to, the national capital. Or, in the European countries are smaller. France and Germany are fairly large, but they're only about the size of Oregon, for instance, or Washington State.
Okay, well, Dave, here's what I was thinking. Remember, Occupy.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think that there's like a few million people that lived right around the Occupy thing that should have been pretty upset and in Occupy? I mean, millions of poor people in New York, millions of working people.
Yes.
You get a few hundred.
Well, there was more than a few hundred built at Zuccotti Park. I mean, there was thousands. And at one point during the Occupy movement back in 2011, they only one point marched across the Brooklyn Bridge in vast numbers and got mass arrested, or at least a segment of them. But they occupied Times Square, and it was total chaos. I mean, they shut down Times Square for a while.
Well, I know, but I mean, it should be... All I'm saying is that there's that many people around there that should have been incredibly dissatisfied living there, and they would not come out. I mean, okay, a few thousand people. How many people live around in the New York metro area that should be dissatisfied within an easy bus ride of something?
Yeah, that's true. But also, look at how quickly that spread, though, to other parts of the country, including here in Champaign-Urbana, developing local Occupy movements.
But I thought that's a really good idea. Mm-hmm. And I would like to see more nationwide local things. Like a few years ago, they had the big environmental climate deal. Mm-hmm. And what they had was all over the world in a few big cities, these giant concerts. And then you have like a million people spewing CO2 getting to some city. Uh-huh. When we could have had that, could have been done on a much more local level. And I think that is a really good idea, especially in a country as large as the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm really disappointed that, there just isn't more happening. Because there are so many people that are dissatisfied. You hear it in every conversation, but they won't You know, I do have to say I've been real happy around here locally when the building trades, one of their leaders gets a hair up their butt over Ronner.
And they'll get, Ronner, yeah.
Yeah, when he comes to town, and we'll get out and demonstrate at the non-union Hilton.
Yeah, yes,
you know, oh, Paris Hilton, there's another one for you.
Yeah.
Her and Brittany.
Yes, Paris Hilton Hotel here, the only non-union hotel in Champaign-Urbana.
Okay. Non-union built.
Non-union built, yeah.